Okay, it's August what? No, September 1st. And I'm going to ask God to set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, thank you for your grace and mercy and allowing us to glorify you tonight by carrying your message. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, tonight we are on page 20, but there you go. I'm going to review, and I want to look at page bottom of page 19, that last sentence, because it's something that isn't read at many meetings, and it has all the spiritual truth. It says, most of us sense, not all of us, because you've been in AA, you know that, but most of us sense that real tolerance, notice the word real tolerance of other people's shortcomings, practicing consideration, love and tolerance, and viewpoints, that's really important. Look at our world today. We have to be tolerant of the way people are and of their viewpoints, and respect for their opinions. And you know why? If you have tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and respect for their opinions, you don't get disturbed. But if you don't tolerate their shortcomings and their view and their opinions, you get disturbed. And so they're entitled to be who they are. And we were talking about that, Bryce and I, before the meetings. Our attitudes, which make us more useful to others. And isn't that why we're here? What's the real purpose in AA? Where does it say in the book? It says on page 78, 77, I'm getting old, and we got some new people here. It says on the top of 77, at the moment we are trying to put our lives in order. Does that sound like a good thing? And my life was out of order with God. And why? Because I was playing God. Anybody else do that? And so I put my life in order with God by steps 1, 2, and 3. And then how do I put myself in order with my thinking, with my mind? How do I get my thinking right and see the truth when I think is steps 4, 5, 6, and 7? So I don't believe my resentments anymore and my fears, and I don't take actions and cause shame and guilt, and I don't want to practice my character defects. And then how do we put ourselves right with the world and other people? Steps 8 and 9. So we lose our fear of people. Mom called. We lose our fear of people. But this is not an end in itself. What does it say? My real purpose, I have to remind myself, my real purpose is to be of service to God and the people about us. But that's not what it says. It says my real purpose is to fit myself. I need to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and others. How do I fit myself? I have to be in right relationship with Him. I have to allow God to work. I have to be spiritually fit. How do you do that? Prayer, inventory, and meditation, practicing steps 10, 11, working steps 1 through 9, making the decision in step 3 based upon your understanding that you're completely broken and screwed without God, and that you need Him, and you can't manage your life anymore, you can't keep from drinking, and you can't fix yourself. And until that happens, you won't be willing to believe that there's a power that can help you, and you won't decide not to play God. So my real purpose, I have to remind myself, who do we work for? Remember, it says, who does it say we work for in the big book? Believe it or not, it says we work for God. So I ask people, what's your job? Our job is to work for Him in all areas of our lives all the time, to glorify Him. And so when I'm working for Michael, I get in trouble, right? And so that's our real purpose. And so we're here to be of service to others and help others. And we can't help others if we have an attitude of intolerance and we don't respect their shortcomings and their viewpoints and their opinions. And so you have a choice. Are you going to be useful to others and serve God and others and have peace and serenity in your life? Or are you going to serve yourself and be angry and fearful and make bad decisions and harm people? Seems a pretty easy choice, doesn't it? Our very lives, your very life, think about it, is ex-problem drinkers. Now, an ex-problem drinker is someone who has recovered from alcoholism, who has done enough spiritual work to have a God working in their lives that they're not obsessed with drinking all the time. And when they think about it, they could say, bad idea. And they're trying to seek to stay close to God. My very life, and it's true for me right now today, depend on my constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. If you're thinking about yourself and how you may meet your needs, you're just in alcoholism. That's alcoholism. It's not that complicated. It has nothing to do with drinking. If I'm constantly thinking about me and what I want, how I'm being treated, and how my needs are not getting met, guess what? I'm not going to feel good. And then what do I do to fix that? I do whatever I can. Now here's another powerful paragraph that's not discussed much. You may have asked yourself, you're getting this book, it's 1939, you can't stop drinking, your life's a mess, and you get this book and you're reading up to page 20, and we've covered it, doctor's opinion, you know, they talk about our hopeless condition of mind and body. So it says, you may have asked yourself as you're reading the book, you're curious to discover how and why, in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. Now, people in society would think that we're still hopeless, alcoholics and addicts, but they know that's not true because they've seen AA work. They've seen the steps work. They've seen people's lives. Almost everybody out there knows somebody who's gone to AA and their life has changed. So we're a witness. We're a living testimony to the power of this program and the power of God. People don't believe in God. They should just have seen a video of me the day before I decided to get on my knees, right, Mark? And seen the videos of us. And so it says, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body, but it's not hopeless anymore, because if you're new here, there are people who have recovered. And how do we recover? The book is going to tell you, because they're going to ask this question. If you're an alcoholic, you want to get over it. Does anybody want to get over it? Yes or no? Nobody can decide. All right, yes, good answer. You may be asking, what do I have to do? Isn't that a good question? I've never seen a new guy come up to me and say, what do I have to do? You know, they usually tell you what they're going to do or their plan. But what do I have to do? It's pretty simple. And I like Sandy Beach. I haven't mentioned him in a while. God bless him. He was one of my spiritual teachers. He said, what do I have to do next? So the question you ask all the time, okay, we've done this, what do I do next? What do I keep doing next? And each day, what do I do next? I'm going to pray tonight. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to get up in the morning. I'm going to seek God. I'm going to watch all day for my selfishness. I'm going to be doing it all tonight. What am I going to do next? And guess what it says? It's the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. So if you want to recover from a hopeless condition of mind and body, what do I have to do? It says 90 meetings in 90 days. Does it say that? No. I have to watch for triggers. No, it doesn't say that. I need group therapy. No, it doesn't say that. Now, that doesn't mean that those things are bad. But what AA is about, the big book called Alcoholics Anonymous, is to answer questions specifically of what actions you have to take to recover. And if you want what we have, or you're willing to go at any length to do what we did, to get what we have. We read that tonight, didn't we? And so if you want what they had, which was recovered, are you willing to do what they did? Now, what did they do? They're going to tell us from page 20 to basically page 88 what they did. Now, anybody new here, take your book and go to 20 and go to page 88. Now, see how hard this is to hold. Not very hard, right? It's not very heavy, is it? Plus, you could probably read all this in one night. It's 60. Yeah. And if I told one of my cancer patients, you have pancreas cancer, it's in your liver, there's no treatment that'll remove this. But if you go home and you go to page 20 in the book Alcoholics Anonymous and you do everything up to page 88, that cancer will go away. And if you keep doing it, it'll stay away. They do it. And so if you want to know what you need to do to recover, it's write the book. And get somebody and go through this book if you're new. And you can listen to the podcast. I've gone through it many times. And so they answer it specifically. They're going to give you specific instructions on what you need to do. So now we're going to go, now they're going to summarize some points to get us ready to take some action. They're going to go from page 20 to page 43 so that you'll understand that you have no defense against the first drink. And in this chapter, they're also going to tell us what the solution looks like. And then we agnostics are going to get you ready to decide if you're willing to believe that there's a power that can help you. And then in how it works, we're going to, they tell you how you make the decision not to play God and let him be your director. And if you do that, then they tell you what you do in step four to unblock yourself. And then they tell you in the next chapter and into action how you can understand the exact nature of your wrongs, your character defects, so you can ask God to remove them all the time in 6 and 7 whenever you're practicing your self-centered character. And then 8 and 9 is how you make amends. You see, it's pretty well laid out. But they want to get you ready to do that because they know alcoholics are not anxious to do all that. They want to get better, but they don't, it's hard to give up on their plan. And they'll decide what they think they need to do. And once you decide what you think you need to do, you're in big trouble. Because we're going to read about it if Mark lets me cover that much. It's up to Mark. For those listening to the podcast, he's my buddy. And they're always telling me I'm never going to cover what I think I'm going to cover. And they're always right. I can take it or leave it alone. Why can't he? That would make sense. Why don't you drink like a gentleman or quit? That fellow can't handle his liquor. Why don't you try beer and wine? Lay off the hard stuff. His willpower must be weak. He could stop if he wanted to. She's such a sweet girl. I should think he'd stop for her sake. The doctor told him if he ever drank again, it would kill him, but there it is. There he is all lit up again. Now, this is how people see us. What was that all about? Now, these are commonplace observations. This is how people see us. Back of them is a world of ignorance and misunderstanding. And they're ignorant because they don't understand our disease. I was having lunch with a few guys, and they just see us as practicing sin. Well, we may be. But they see us as just sinners, you know, lost sinners, which we may be. But they don't understand that we don't have any power to do different. And we don't have any power once we drink to control how much we drink, do we? And do we have any power to stay sober? No. And these expressions refer to people whose reactions are very different from ours. And people who have power, well, if the doctor told me if he drank again, it would kill him, they would stop, right? So we have loss of choice of drinking and loss of control once we drink, and they're going to talk about that in the next few pages. Because they're getting us ready to get to page 24 to realize that there's no hope on our own. And then on page 25, they're going to give us a solution. So that's how this chapter is laid out. Moderate drinkers have little trouble in giving up liquor entirely if they have a good reason for it. They could take it or leave it alone. You know how you know who's a moderate drinker? They don't remember their last drink. They don't know how long they've been sober. It's not important to them. Alcoholics will tell you, well, I didn't drink yesterday. I didn't drink yesterday. Now there's the hard drinker. And there probably are hard drinkers in AA. They have a habit barely enough to gradually impair him physically and mentally. It may cause him to die a few years before his time. If a sufficiently strong reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment, or the warning of a doctor becomes operative, this man can stop or moderate, although he may find it difficult and troublesome and may even need medical attention. Now, what are they saying here? There's some people in AA who are hard drinkers. They come here because they feel like they should stop drinking. They come to AA and they love it, and it's great. Because what makes you a hard drinker and a real alcoholic? Well, the hard drinker can stop if he has sufficient reason to do so. He has the power within him to make a decision not to drink again. An alcoholic can't make that decision. Why? We have a disease that what? Only a spiritual experience can conquer it. What does that mean? It's later on in the book. We have a specific disease that can't be fixed through a pill. It can't be fixed through our self-knowledge. It has to be a power outside of us, has to change us and give us the power not to drink. And so it's a unique disease that only a spiritual experience can conquer. And that's from more about alcoholism, which is the next chapter. But what about the real alcoholics? Are there any real alcoholics in here? Probably. He may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker, but here's the key. At some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. Can anybody relate to that? Now, if you know that you're going to lose control when you start to drink, why would you ever take the first drink? That is just insane, isn't it? Right? All right, so we're going to read. So here's the fellow who's been puzzling you, his lack of control. Now that's because of the allergy of our body, right? What's that called? The phenomenon of craving. If I put alcohol on my body, it does something to me and I want another drink. When I had that Manischewitz wine when I was 13 years old, I went upstairs and had another one. And then I had another one. And my mother said, boy, we drank a lot of Manischewitz wine at Seder tonight. I didn't realize it was a phenomenon of craving. Now, I didn't drink again until I was a freshman at Duke, and then we had the beer with the girls, you know. And I thought, you know, at the beer place, and they had the mug. I still remember pouring the glass of beer, and I was only 17, and I had that beer, and I said, boy, is this bad. I mean, it's really, ugh. And then I said, but I got to have another one. And then I look forward to the next Saturday when we were getting the keg. And then I threw up for the first time. Isn't that great? And then I was looking forward to the next week. I was off and running. It's sad, but that's just the way I was made. And we do absolute, incredible, tragic things while drinking. Anybody agree with that? But you see, that's the effect of alcohol. And it says, you know, we could be fine fellows, I know about that, but if we drink, we become dangerously antisocial, and we have a genius for getting tight at exactly the wrong moment, particularly when some important decision must be made or engagement kept. It says he's often perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except liquor, but we know that's not true. But you know, they had to give themselves some credit writing this book. But we know that when we're sober, that's when the disease is. That's when our mind doesn't like the way the world's treating us. And our mind says, I need the ease and comfort of alcohol. And this here, I possess special abilities, skills, and aptitudes. Anybody else have those? I had a promising career. We have a bright outlook for our family and ourselves. And then we pull it down on our head by a senseless series of sprees. See, it's not enough for us who suffer from alcoholism to have special abilities, gifts. That won't keep us sober. It's not enough for us to have the nice family and all that. That won't keep us sober, you see? Remember Jim? Jim had the family back and all that. And then Jim had whiskey with milk and thought it was a great idea. We're just selling a card, the country at a bar. For the firm that he used to own, and now he worked for it. He didn't show up on Monday, and on Tuesday he had an argument with the boss. The new people haven't read Jim's story, but that's more about alcoholism. It's a disease of, and it says, what was wrong with Jim? He failed to enlarge his spiritual life. He had no spiritual solution for his alcoholism. Remember, alcohol is a treatment for our spiritual illness that doesn't work. So the treatment for my spiritual illness has to be God. And my spiritual illness is that when I'm separated from God, I don't like the way things are going, and I get angry. Anybody get angry? Anybody get fearful? Anybody make bad decisions and then they get, everybody's pissed off at you. And then you say, well, I need a drink. And it happens without even thinking about it. And so, and then he says, anybody search madly for the bottle they misplaced? Anybody hide alcohol around the house? Anybody find alcohol when they came back from treatment? That's always fun. Then comes the day when he simply cannot make it and gets drunk all over again. Perhaps he goes to the doctor, gives him morphine or sedative, which puts the taper off, and then he goes to hospitals and sanitariums. It's a progressive disease. It's a progressive disease. Those guys who are young, still have their families, still have their, quote, shit together, excuse me for the podcast. Just remember, it's a progressive disease. Just keeps getting worse. Eventually, alcohol will take everything. People agree with that? It will take us. This is no, by means, a comprehensive picture of the true alcoholic, but this description should identify him roughly. Why does he behave like that? Isn't that a good question? Why do we behave like this? If hundreds of experiences, and it's so clearly written, have shown him that one drink means another debacle. Debacle's not good, by the way. With all its attendant suffering and humiliation, did anybody swear that they weren't going to drink and then drink, and then the next day feel like crap? Why did you take the first drink? Why can't you stay on the water wagon? What has become of common sense and willpower that he sometimes displays? Notice sometimes, you see they're not getting, the guy isn't perfect now. Sometimes displays with respect to other matters. Why doesn't willpower work? Anybody swear they're never going to drink again? And then why can't you follow through on that? Because right before you drink, your mind tells you it's okay. And it tells you it's okay, even though you knew an hour before it wasn't. But right before you drink, willpower won't work because you can't see what alcohol is going to do to you, only what it's going to do for you. Does anybody feel better on the way to the liquor store, better when you're getting your pills or shots or whatever you need? Because the relief is coming, the relief from living a life of self-centeredness and separated from God. Perhaps there will never be a full answer to these questions. Opinions vary considerably why we react differently from normal people. We are not sure why once a certain point is reached, little can be done for him. This is a serious disease. We joke around a lot, but this is a serious disease. It's a fatal disease. What is the certain point is reached when you become a real alcoholic? When you've completely lost the power to say no to alcohol. You have no defense against the first drink. Now what that means is, in English, is you're going to drink again if you're a real alcoholic. You will, if without God. Now some people will prove me wrong, that's fine. But in general, that's what they're telling you. I mean, and some people can do it without working the steps. They find a relationship with God through other means, and they have a power, and they're able to say no. Or else sometimes they were just hard drinkers, remember? And they can quit. We know an alcoholic keeps away from drink. He reacts much like other men. I don't know what they're talking about there, how we react, but we're positive that once we take it in our system, something happens that makes it virtually impossible for us to stop. So there it goes. If you can't take one drink successfully and control how much you drink, the treatment for that is to not drink. Anybody agree with that? So here's the questions. It says his observations would be academic and pointless if we never took the first drink. In fact, we could just have a meeting here and say, don't take the first drink. Let's go home, right? That's the program. Just say no, Nancy Reagan. I'm old, so I remember that. We had the just say no program. You remember that, okay. And she meant well, but she didn't understand this. And here it is. The main problem the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. It's our mind that's killing us. It's our thinking. It's the way we see the world. Joan Charlie make the point when alcoholics shoot themselves, they don't shoot themselves in the feet. They shoot themselves in the head. And they want to quiet the noise. And we shouldn't joke about that because Stu and I had a sponsee that killed himself. And that was horrible. And people have died and commit suicide because they just can't go on anymore. But it centers in our mind. It centers in the way I think. And here's another thing people don't realize if you're new. The disease of alcoholism has nothing to do with what happens after you drink. That's just bad crap from putting something in your body that you can't control. The disease of alcoholism occurs when you're sober. You can't live sober in the world and have peace and serenity, and you can't control your emotional nature sober, and you drink to relieve it. Remember, we have the new guys don't realize, but when you're an alcoholic, you have this thermometer in your head. And as you go through the days, your emotions build up. You become more restless, more irritable, more disconnected, more fear, more angry, more intolerant. And these emotions build up. And each person has a different temperature on the thermometer at which they will drink. But once their emotions reach a certain point, boom, their mind says, I need a drink. And step zero is when you're here and you know you can't control how much you drink. And you know you can't stop, but you haven't done any work. So you're just living sober and your emotions build up. How long can you go in AA and not work the steps and not drink again? And that's the real question. And so they're telling you now where the disease centers. It centers in your mind. And I'm just going to read the next two paragraphs, and then we'll pick up next Saturday. It says, probably review too. If you ask him why he started the last bender, the chances are he may offer you $100. A lot of times I ask people, why'd you drink? And they just don't know. Now, after you work with them a while, they can see it. But, you know, I just don't know. And none of it really makes sense in light of the havoc that drinking creates. And it sounds like the philosophy, man, as a headache keeps hitting yourself in the hammer so you can't feel the headache. I don't know where they got that analogy from. And it says, draw this fallacious reasoning to the attention of the alcoholic. He will laugh it up or become irritated, refuse to talk. Why does he become irritated? Because he sees that he had no rational reason to drink. It doesn't make any sense. It's tough. And we have no defense. And once in a while, I may tell you the truth. But I don't know if we ever really know the truth because we drink on a lie, right? We drink on a lie because we believe what we're thinking. And the fourth step teaches you that what you're thinking is wrong. All these resentments, all these fears, they're not really true. They're just in your head. And you're seeing the world through your self-centered glasses, and it's not even really true. And so you drink on a lie. Anybody do that? You drink at people. You drink at things. Or because you're afraid of things. And it says, no idea. Most of the time, he has no idea why he took the first drink. And it says, but in their hearts, they really do not know why they do it. And once this malady has a real hold, they're a baffled lot. And what did we read tonight? Alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful. With help, it is too much for us. And there's the obsession, somehow, someday, they will beat the game. I hear that all the time. People always have a plan. But they don't realize that they're down for the count, but they don't know that. Now, down for the count's when you're knocked out and you're flat on the ring and you can't get up. But people keep getting up and they don't realize that they're really down. And until they realize they're down, they can't ever get up. Until we realize we're completely defeated, we can't succeed in getting better. And so I think we'll start with that. And this obsession that they're going to beat the game is what kills alcoholics. We can't give up on managing our lives, our plan. That's why I like to read, what do I do next? What are the steps, programs, specific actions that I need to take? That are in the book that aren't my plan. So I'll stop with that. I hope this was helpful tonight. Thank you.